Welcome to Unlimited Parenting, where we discuss having children with disabilities or special healthcare needs. My name is Allison, and I am so excited to be joined today by certified professional life coach, advocate, and now author, Susanna Peace Lavelle, to discuss her book, Your True Self is Enough. So let's jump right into the conversation. Thank you so much for being here. We so appreciate your time and having you here. Before we kind of take a dive into your book and ask you those sorts of questions, I was hoping you could just take a minute to kind of describe your journey and introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. I would love to do that. Well, firstly, my name is Susanna Peace Lavelle. I am a mother. I am a single mother supporting one daughter. I have she just turned 18, so she likes to be referred to as a legal adult now. her name is Arizona, and my life and my work are very connected. So everything is sort of integrated and intertwined, and everything is the same. So it's fun. It's interesting. It's fun. I advocate for disability families. I'm a coach, a life coach for disability families. I do a lot of speaking engagements and workshops and retreats. I'm an author, as you can see. My first published work is right there on the table, which is actually mostly memoir, but it's sort of split up as anecdotal stories of my journey raising a child that was unexpected in many ways in terms of my vision, my own vision that I had for my own motherhood. And then I also include at the end of each chapter a little bit of, you know, sort of hints and tips around, you know, truth corners, if you will, you know, information that I know now that I wish I had known back then. And it's not just facts and figures. It's also just leaning into, you know, spiritual awakenings and opportunities and the possibility of just stretching and growing and transforming, even in the discomfort and the hard times. So, yeah, I'm so happy to be here. This is absolutely not what I expected for my own life at this juncture, but I have to say it has been such an amazing journey in terms of my own growth and evolution. And I'm so grateful that I am not numb to this life because of this life. So that's me. That's, and I'm here in Los Angeles, California, but I'm also everywhere online. So
perfect. Yeah. You mentioned that too about being a single parent with support. Can you describe more about that?
I did not start off as a single mother. Okay. So I, you know, was married, and I was married to Arizona's dad for quite some time. When she was around 7 or 8, we separated and got divorced. She primarily lives with me, I would say 97% of the time, full time. So by single supporting, I mean that I am sort of doing the day to day, but I do have support from my ex-husband, and he's very much involved in our daughter's life. I just happen to be doing the day to day. So I feel like that's a lot in terms of not just having, you know, someone else to like bounce things off of in the moment.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And or at 3 a.m. if Arizona is having a worry and waking up multiple times in the night. So that's been a little bit challenging in terms of not having that sort of partnership. But it's a different kind of partnership. And what I have learned in this life is that everything that I expected to happen in my life has sort of veered off path and created a new path that I didn't even know existed. So here I am in partnership with Arizona's father in a different way, okay. If that makes sense. Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. Just in speaking about that, in your life transitioning in ways that you had no idea would come about, what do you like to share most with families who are just new to this world and getting their diagnosis?
Yeah. You know, first of all, life can be tricky. We are ultimately not in control. I know that a lot of us think that we are. I am very much type A control freak. I have been my entire life, and it's kind of almost funny, like, well, of course then I would be in the situation where I would have the ability to learn how to not be so controlling. But it's really challenging to take ourselves out of it. But I think that's something that's very important for us to do as much as we possibly can. Number one, so that we can be as present as possible in each moment, and just leaning into the child that we have or the children that we have that came through us and to us, so that we can just learn to honor them for exactly who they are. And so leaning into their world, getting into their world, and just being like, you are just this perfect and amazing, perfectly intact soul, you know, that was brought into my life in this lifetime. And so being able to be present. And then number two, really just, you know, practice of taking our ego out of everything. It's really hard sometimes, but to just be like, listen, just because this person, you know, was born to me doesn't mean that I get to decide what their likes and dislikes are going to be and how their behavior is going to be. You know, we have all of these preconceived notions. A lot of us do, you know, before we're parents of like, well, that's going to be my little mini me, you know, and they're going to like this sport and they're going to want to go to dance class and they're going to want to wear their hair girly, you know, whatever it is, right? We have these preconceived notions and, you know, honestly, like desires, right? We have these wishes, like we want, you know, our children to be a perfect way, behave a perfect, you know, way or whatever it is, be kind and generous, all of these fun things, but also super smart and, you know, straight A's and, well, anyway.
And that cure cancer.
I mean, why not, right? And all of the above, right? Win Wimbledon, I guess, you know? So yeah, I just feel like it's such an opportunity to sort of take a breath and take a step back. I know it's so hard, like getting that diagnosis, any diagnosis where you're just like, well, I don't know what to do next. That's not what I planned for, right? That's not, you know, that's not what I trained for, whatever it is, to be a mom, you know, I don't know that, you know, I don't know food allergies. Like that was the first, you know, sort of journey in my role of parenting Arizona. Like she was allergic to everything. And I was like, I don't know how to do that, you know?
And there's no chapter about that in the book, right? What to expect when you're expecting. There's no chapter about allergies or disabilities or...
Man, and you know, I read that so religiously too. I was, and especially when I was pregnant, because I was like, okay, what's going to happen next? You know what I mean? When is my morning sickness going to go away? It didn't, by the way, for me. You know, I was throwing up for 7.5 months and that wasn't in the book either. So... what am I supposed to do? Right.
Right. Where do I go next? I hear a lot of parents say, you know, it's like a grieving process when you get that diagnosis. Did you feel that way?
You know, I did not have, I had sort of a delayed response.
Okay.
So just a little bit of background in terms of grieving and mourning. I will say that I suffered quite early on when my daughter was born with postpartum anxiety and depression. And for me, that had nothing to do with her disability or diagnosis because I didn't know any of that yet. It was just this mourning of like my life as it once was and feeling like, gosh, I just don't have as much agency as I used to in terms of like, you know, traveling and doing all the things, right? Just everything felt everything changed like overnight. You know what I mean? I was like, wait a minute, what happened to my independence? I'm, you know, missing that. So because I had already sort of been down in the dumps and never kind of really got out of it, I feel like the diagnosis, the actual diagnosis, and actually I should say diagnoses, because there were many of them, didn't really take me out. In that sense, I felt like initially, because I was so depressed in my own life of just feeling like a failure as a mother and just not finding joy being a mother to a child that cried all day, every day. I just couldn't find joy. I couldn't access joy. I just felt like, okay, well, now there's this diagnosis, but I'm also being given all of these, you know, instructions, like she needs to be in occupational therapy and speech therapy. And so I felt like very much like, okay, so now maybe I can make up for being such a failure of a mother to now being able to do something to help my child. So within me rose this, I don't know, warrior spirit, something of like, just go get them. Like now I know, now I have my marching papers. So now, I mean, my mind is, I'm a hot mess. Okay. So I literally was like, you know, let me now fill up this time, you know, sort of redeeming myself because I've had such a hard time so far as a mother. And my daughter was about 2.5 years at this point. And so I just went. I just was like, go, you know, and that gave me some sort of purpose. You know, right. And then as I was moving along in the process, you know, that grief did come up. It started bubbling to the surface when I was able to really like slow down and be in silence and sit still, which was very uncomfortable and not something that I love to do. But ultimately, that is what happened. And so I have had, to me, grief in this process has been so cyclical. You know, it's like you have these moments where I think I got this, you know, I think things are okay. My daughter seems regulated and, you know, happy and leaning into the things that are of interest to her. And then there's, you know, then there's a shift and change, you know, so many different stages and chapters just in motherhood and just in parenting in general, just in life in general. Right. Mm-hmm. So it is, man, it is. Yeah. It's never ending. And so we always get the opportunity to practice and try again. Like every morning there was a new sun. I just feel like, wow, okay, I messed up today. I was not at my best today. And guess what? We're gonna try again tomorrow.
I'd like to hear more about something that you just mentioned, your mantra of find your joy. What are you meaning by that?
Yeah. First of all, I will say that I feel like I teach and I speak about what I most need to learn and what I am continuing to learn on this journey we call life, with all of its ups and downs and unexpected, you know, things that happen. Finding your joy, to me, that is something that I've always tried to lean into in terms of, you know, how can I even just get through this moment? How can I get through this next hour? The days have been very, very long for me on this journey. The years have gone by like that, but the days and the minutes have been so torturously, painstakingly long, and especially in the early days. And so I would just, in order to sort of keep myself going, I was like, okay, all right, let me just find my joy today. Like, what is joy going to look like for me today? Even if it's just a glimmer, like a little snippet, what can that look like for me today? And often it had to do with like, what am I going to make for lunch? You know, or, you know, how am I going to support myself when my daughter's taking one of her 30-minute cat naps because she never took naps during the day, right? What am I going to do during that 30 minutes that is not a house chore? You know, how can I find some time to write in something in my journal, right? What, you know, that to me has always been like very supportive. So yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, having the intention around, I am seeking out whatever joy can be available to me today in this moment, next week, you know, short term, long term. Sometimes it looks differently every day and in every moment. And so, you know, I am just constantly trying to access something that will help me move forward sometimes, and especially when it's tough. But then, you know, what's beautiful and so amazing is that over time, you realize that you've created this little toolbox of different types of support that can help you to access your joy maybe a little bit sooner or quicker. You know, maybe the bounce back is not so lengthy in terms of having a challenge or a downtime, you know? And by the way, those downtimes are okay too. Like, we just have to lean into what is real and true for us in each moment. But I mean, today I'm going to have a delicious glass of, I'm going to have some Diet Coke with my lunch. Like, to me, that's a lot of ice. Like, that's a treat for me. So, you know.
Absolutely. And I have found on my own personal, you know, self-care, soul care journey, right? Mm-hmm. That the more little moments of happiness that you find and you take, the more you find around you.
Yes.
So the more I choose to recognize it, the more I see it for myself.
Absolutely. And again, it's part of that like muscle that we're practicing. And then all of a sudden things show up. It's almost like, you know, a new lens. All of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, I looked up at the sky yesterday. Honestly, I was just looking up at the sky and I was like, wow, that cloud formation is phenomenal. You know, right?
I mean,
how often do I say that? Not often. I just happen to look up and be like, wow, you know, I am alive and breathing in this moment. So listen, it could be a big thing. It could be a little thing. It could be, you know, a one-off thing. But yeah, I absolutely agree with you. What we are seeking is seeking us in return. And I feel like these moments will pop up. And it's so awesome. So fun.
There's another facet to this conversation in reading your book that I found so interesting, and that's culture. How do you think that culture plays in the experience of families who are supporting children with disabilities?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, culture, yeah, I feel like shifts, you know, the conversation, the perspective. I feel like though, the way that I have experienced motherhood here in, you know, the United States, and actually more specifically in Los Angeles, California, because I feel like we are also a different country, to be honest.
Right.
And I, you know, this is where I have to be right now. And I'm grateful. And I'm grateful. And I feel like, especially here, there is this idea and this notion that women and mothers really need to be able to do it all. You know, like
all of the time,
all of the time. And by the way, don't complain and, you know, try to be as cute as possible. Right. And, you know, by any means, don't accept help. You know, like that's just instant failure. So I just feel like there's like this culture around, you know, we revere the suffering sometimes, you know, it's almost like, you know, we get into these conversations, especially as new moms or, you know, even now. I mean, I just feel like even sometimes for myself, even though I'm trying to be as conscious as possible, we just get pulled into these conversations where it's almost like we're playing like the hardship Olympics, right?
Right. You're trying to one-up the next person.
Right. You know, my nanny canceled today and, you know, now I have to take three kids to three different schools and whatever. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, well, my husband's traveling. You know, it's kind of almost like that's what's revered and admired. And I just want to shift this narrative so much. I leaned into this very much as a new mom, like, oh, why should I need help? I'm like taking a break from working. Like I'm on maternity leave. I might not even go back. In fact, my former husband and I had planned for me to stay at home at least for the near term when Arizona was born. And I felt so lucky and blessed that we had planned for that financially. And yet and still I was like, oh, my gosh, this is so hard. And I also was telling myself at the same time, yeah, OK, but you're not working or doing anything else. Like all you have to do is take care of the baby. Hush your trap. You know what I mean? I mean, these were the voices in my head. And so as I was like, you know, taking my daughter out in the public, you know, on walks or trying to, you know, just get out of the house, and she cried all the time incessantly. I mean, she cried for the first 18 months of her life nonstop because of her food allergies, which, you know, turned into like head to toe eczema and rashes. And I mean, It was tough times back then. And yet and still, I was, again, having this self-talk of like, okay, but don't ask for help, you know, do it yourself and don't complain. This is what you wanted. You wanted to be a mom, you know, and now you get to be mom. How, you know, entitled are you to, you know, need help and support when you're not, you know, bringing home the bacon? Like, you're not supporting, you're not doing anything. I mean, that's what I thought. Okay. And that's what a lot of us think, you know? And so we suffer in silence. It's like we're dying on the vine, you know?
Do you think that that was maybe the impetus or the vision kind of behind your book is just to get that message out to more families, that you don't need to live in that, you know, cycle in your head, that you can break out and here's kind of how I did it?
For sure. I mean, one of the reasons why I wrote this book, well, there were multiple reasons, but one of them really was because when I was first going through the initial diagnosis process with Arizona and everything else that comes along with it, I was like, I am just like alone out here. I feel so isolated. I feel like I'm on an island. I'm the only person on this island. I mean, this wasn't that long ago, but it was 18 years ago. You know, a lot of things have shifted and changed since then in terms of support and resources and what we're talking about. But I was definitely like, I would have liked to have met just one other mom, you know, not a professional, no, not a doctor, not a pediatrician, not a therapist. I wanted to at least have heard from one other mom, like, everything is going to be okay. Like, yeah, you know, might not seem okay right now, might not look okay or feel okay, but it will be okay. Things are going to shift and change because you're going to be able to shift and change. But I didn't have any kind of roadmap. There was no blueprint. There was nothing. There wasn't even like what to do after you get a diagnosis, not even like a one sheet, like fact sheet of anything. It was just like, okay, well, I mean, you know, it's like when Arizona was first diagnosed with a psychologist at the regional center, you know, I brought her in because I was having concerns about, you know, her behavior and her intention and what she was doing. And I didn't know what was going on. And as soon as I walked in, you know, they were like drilling her with questions. And she was like, huh? What's very confused. Right. What's going on? Who are you? And the psychologist was like, oh, spielled that one. Oh, failed that question. Oh, failed that one. You know, I was like, this is horrific. And she was like, well, this looks a lot like autism, but you know that, right, mom? And I was like, no, I, that's why we're here. I don't know anything. It was absolutely isolating, frightening, debilitating. Yeah, it was demoralizing, all of the above. I was like gut punched over and over and over again in this process. And it was really challenging. So I wanted to be some sort of light. And that's actually why I became a coach, because I felt like so many people were reaching out to me, asking me for advice or help, or, oh, you know, I have a friend whose son was just diagnosed. Oh, my cousin's daughter just, you know, got a diagnosis. Can you talk to them? And so I realized like, this is actually a very supportive service that I'm offering. And not because I have like, you know, 10 PhDs, but rather because I don't, by the way, I don't even have one.
you have a PhD in lived experience.
I feel like I do. I have a PhD in, that's right, in parenting Arizona. but that's it. And so I wanted to, again, like be like some sort of beacon of light or touch point, or like, yeah, I'm a real person living this. And that's how I get, actually, all of my clients are all referral based. And
wow,
primarily it's like, we feel like you see us, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, we have different, you know, experiences and different situations, but ultimately it's an altered motherhood, you know?
Absolutely. Do you, in saying that, do you think that that's how the format for the book Your True Self Is Enough came about, that part memoir, part guidebook? Was that just another attempt at you kind of guiding families
Yeah. And actually, too, this is an interesting journey of even publishing this book, because what you have there on your table is probably in its like 75th iteration, right? So initially, when I start, yes, I love that.
I set it next to the tissues because you might need them when you read through some of the truth corners.
Yeah, I know. I started, you know, just as this cathartic process of doing this, you know, kitchen sink dump. Like I literally wrote everything. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm a journaler. So I've been journaling since I was 13. So I have everything just, you know, all of the moments and the feelings captured on paper. And so I had, it used to be like 300, 350 pages of just dumping every single detail, every single thing. And then, and I started this process about 10 years ago. So when Arizona was around 7, 8. And as she grew older and I was, you know, working on the book, and sometimes I would have to take a long break because it was, it's such an emotional write and can be very triggering for me sometimes. And I, you know, sometimes I need to keep moving forward in my life. And so I had to take some breaks from time to time. But, you know, as I was working on the book, you know, Arizona was like getting older, right? And she was becoming more aware and cognizant of what I was writing about. And I was always very trying to be as, you know, transparent as possible. Like this, I'm trying to tell my story to share with other families and parents, you know, some hopeful tips potentially. And she really was like, yeah, I don't want you to tell the story about, you know, fill in the blank. And I don't want people to, you know, I'm, you know, mommy, I'm embarrassed and I don't do it, right? So to the point that, you know, my, I had this vision in my head since, you know, I was on the acupuncture table when Arizona was like 5 or 6 that I was going to write this book called A is for Arizona. Like the title was so clear because all of her diagnoses happen to start with the letter A, right? Even with the allergies and the asthma, you know, autism spectrum disorder, ADHD, auditory processing disorder, and anxiety, everything was the letter A. And I just wanted to be like, oh, but no, but A is for Arizona. It's not for all these diagnoses. And she was like, yeah, you can't use my name.
Oh, is that why you refer to her as A in the novel?
That's why I refer to her as A in the book. And she's, by the way, totally okay with me talking about Arizona, you know, as I'm having this conversation with you openly. And she's like, well, why don't you call it A is for Ariana? And I was like, because that doesn't connect with me. Like, I don't. So then, you know, our compromise, though, in order to be able to put this out in the world, because she was very adamant at, you know, a certain period of time where she was like, nope, you can't write this book. Sorry. And I was like, oh, but I mean, if I sell some books, maybe I can buy you an American Girl doll. You know, that's her obsession, right? And so we came up with a compromise, and that was she wrote the foreword, okay? And in that foreword, she was able to tell families what she wants them to be able to know about her and her journey and this journey. And one of the things that she said in the foreword was, I just want people to know, Mama, that your true self is enough.
Oh.
I mean, so...
Period. Stop.
Period. End of story. Done. Say no more, or whatever the young people say. Say less.
Say less. Low key, say less.
Low key. Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Right. So I was like, well, there we have it. And it is, I think that works for me. And I, you know, it's something that I need a constant reminder of daily that my
true self. The rest is history.
Yeah, right. So that's how that came about.
When you're talking about, you know, writing a memoir and in some of the things that you had just said, it sounds a lot like you're taking these decompression breaks, as it was, because it's almost like you're confronting your demons when you're writing this book a little bit. You're really laying your whole life out for people. Is that part of the reason that the book includes the truth corners? Is kind of you leveling with yourself almost?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I wanted to also make sure that even though I am, you know, was trying to tell my truth as vulnerably as possible, I also wanted to just like, and by the way, I just need to remind you that I am still a human being. Like, I don't know what I'm doing most of the time. Like, I have not figured anything out. You know, at every stage of this parenting journey, something new has reared its head. And I'm like, I don't know what that means. And then forget about it. You know, when they hit puberty, it's like you have to start raising a completely different person. And then, you know, I'm, you know, in menopause at the same time. It's really fun, you know? So, so it like keeps you on your toes, but I did, you know, the truth corners for me were like, okay, listen, you know, these are some hints and tips that may or may not work for you. And at the end of the day, it's like, lean into what is good for you, because what is good for you is good for the universe, period. Yeah. And what is good for you is good for your child and your children. And what is great for you is great for your child or children and everyone around you. It is just absolutely, unequivocally, you know, a fact if we can really lean into that messaging. And so I just never want anyone to feel like, ugh, well, I can't do that. She told me to find my joy. I can't find my joy. Yeah, forget the joy. Survival is a feat sometimes. Let's even just decide, like, I want to be here tomorrow. I want to see what tomorrow brings, you know? It's a very sort of, you know, it's an inner journey that we can choose and lean into, and everything is okay. And you are not wrong. And there's nothing broken, you know? There's nothing to fix with the way that you're feeling. It's just, we are human beings meant to, you know, have reactions and responses to all of these different facets of life just coming at us, you know?
There's a lot of what you're saying really resonates with me, where I am personally in my journey with 3 autistic children, but it also reminds me of something I've been seeing a lot on the internet, which is kind of this moment when youth in their teens realize, you know, like, this is my mom's first time too. She's just a girl. She's trying to figure it out while also being here for me. This is her journey too. And I feel like that was kind of your book for me personally. Mm-hmm. This is another mom, you know, with a daughter who starts with A, just like me, who is autistic. And this is, she's experiencing all of this right alongside her A at the same time. And so it really resonated with me on that deep level. And there's honestly not a lot of the memoir type books that have that truth, kind of like real talk area where it's, you know, like, this is how we battled with allergies. This is how we battled, you know, there's a whole kind of section in the book about what happens with school.
Yeah.
I'm touring schools and this worked out and this didn't, and friends and culture. And it just, that really hit home for me.
That's so beautiful to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that this is going to be a book this book to me kind of seems like one of the books. It's not, you know, you read it and you put it on your shelf, you know, like, oh, I loved this book. It gets, you know, on the highest tier of my shelf. This is one of those books where you read it and it doesn't stay with you. You pass it to a friend.
Mm.
Oh, this, I've highlighted this chapter for you because it's a sisterhood of the traveling book. Is what I hope this book kind of becomes, because it really is so, it's not just facts. It's not just your story. It's just so interwoven with help and joy, really. And it's just, it's beautiful. I really liked it for what it's worth. Going back a little bit earlier to something you had said, when you were feeling lonely and as if you didn't have kind of a network, especially right after Arizona got her diagnosis, at any point in this journey, had you reached out to the Parent Training and Information Center, whether it was in California or if you were in another state?
No. And in fact, even as we became clients of the regional center, there wasn't any offering in terms of, you know, support group. Or I had gone to a few support groups when I was experiencing postpartum depression and anxiety when Arizona was really young. And I did not have positive experiences in those groups. I felt like I needed to be uplifted and I wasn't able to access that in those meetings. It had nothing to do with everyone else. It's just that I think that I was hoping for like a lifeline and I wasn't receiving it. I just felt like it was, we were all just talking about our horrible experiences. Yeah. And I was like, but what do I do? You know what I mean? Tell me how do I fix it? That. Yes. Nothing was accessible to me. It wasn't until Arizona, speaking of finding the right learning environment for your child, you know, had to go through that whole process of like, this is not the right place. And it was a very hard process hearing that your child doesn't fit in, like it's your fault, right? And so we ended up at this very small therapeutic, bare boned, like no frills, phenomenal therapeutic preschool and kindergarten. And that's when I was introduced to support groups, like a parent group. And in fact, it was mandatory. Like if your child is going to be part of this program, because they believed in, healing the child by, supporting the entire family. And so every Thursday morning, 9 a.m. after drop-off, we had a mandatory one-hour parent group. And I will tell you, we were there at that school for like 2.5 years. And you just make it work, even as you're working or you're not working, whatever. You just make it work because that's so impactful in terms of how supportive the program was going to be for the child. And I just remembered for the first year, I would show up at those support groups and I just wept. I just cried almost the entire, every time I opened my mouth to share something, I'm like, can't talk, just crying. Because I just finally felt like I'm in the safe space. I'm finally building my own community, my tribe. I couldn't find it. I didn't know where to find it. Before now, but it's becoming clear to me that there are others like me that are out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no more spoilers. The book is Your True Self is Enough by the lovely human mom, author, speaker, coach, Susanna Peace Lavelle.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everyone out there, for listening in. And know that if you are in Idaho or planning on moving to Idaho and have questions on systems or services for children with disabilities, please consider reaching out to us on our website at IPULIdaho, that's IPULIdaho.org, or by calling us at 208-342-5884. Be sure to tune in next time. Until then, this has been Unlimited Parenting.
Thanks for listening!